Ezekiel, the 37th chapter and the 5th verse. Thus says the Lord to these bones, I will cause breath to enter you, and you shall live. Prophesy to these bones. And the Lord God said, I'll cause breath to enter, and these bones shall live. CPR at a cemetery. CPR at a cemetery. My friends, there is a dominant theme throughout the entire Bible. God sides with the oppressed. Consider the Hebrew Bible. From the story of slavery in Egypt to that of exile in Babylon, the most memorable narratives involve a God and God's people who stand against systems of oppression. Moses could have remained comfortable within the privilege of Pharaoh's palace. Yet he risked it all to side with the enslaved. He risked it all to name societal corruption that those in power took for granted as normal. Similarly, the Hebrew prophets spoke of God's care for the most vulnerable in Israel. Prophets like Amos had little tolerance for those who, I quote, trample the head of the poor and push the afflicted out of the way. Nor did Jesus complicate or obfuscate his divine call. Jesus walked into the synagogue and inaugurated his ministry by quoting from Isaiah, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me. Because he's anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim release to the captives, recovery of sight to the blind, and to let the oppressed go free." When we couple this scene in Luke with what has to be considered Jesus's boldest and bravest parable in Matthew 25, we encounter a Christ who calls us to identify with the hungry, the foreigner, the ill, the exploited, and the imprisoned. For as we treat them, Jesus teaches us, we treat God. Well, many of you know this already. This is particularly true among our students and our graduating seniors from the college, divinity school, all of the other professional schools. I've taught them. I have learned from them. I've listened to their stories and heard about their commitment to justice and righteousness. And as they prepare to go off to medical school, law school, consulting, education, the performing arts, ministry, they desire to use their education to expand access. These wonderful students that are going to graduate this week, they have visions of a world where no child has to languish in an under-resourced classroom that will soon be replaced by a jail cell. They dream of a world where families in Korea can visit relatively freely and visit their relatives easily across the north and south border. They imagine children in remote regions of China and Central Africa having access to advances in healthcare that you and I take for granted. And they imagine parents in the United States who can send children to school without fear that they'll return in a body bag. This is why, when I look upon the faces of our incredible students, I don't question their desire. But I do question, and I do fear their eventual despair. Our students have visions of a just world, even as they may underestimate the obstinate structures of injustice. They do have a commitment to be more compassionate and live in more loving communities, even as they mentally elide the intransigent nature of suffering and evil in our society. We have to deal with the reality that corruption and injustice are Lernaean hydras of Greek lore. For whenever we cut off one head, it seems that two or more reappear elsewhere. That seems to be the history of social progress. We abolish the system of slavery in America, and then segregation and a racialized prison system immediately take its place. We overcome select barriers to women in the workplace, and immediately real wages begin to drop and the cost of childcare becomes unfeasible. We celebrate technological advances that improve the quality of life and connect us globally into a more beloved community. Though these same technologies make the weapons of international warfare less conspicuous and thus much more sinister, our fight for goodness and righteousness, it's not a matter of desire. It's a matter of inevitable despair. It's not a matter of dreams and ambitions. It's a matter of moral despondency and ethical exhaustion. In the words of Langston Hughes, what happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun, or does it fester like a sore and then run, or does it crust over and sugar over like syrup is sweet? Does it stink like rotten meat? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load, or maybe it just explodes. These, my friends, are the questions the prophet Ezekiel wrestles with in this morning's lectionary text. God takes Ezekiel down and sits Ezekiel in a graveyard full of despair, despondency, and desiccation. This particular story, the graveyard, represents the entire nation of Israel, both the north and the south. And God asks Ezekiel the question, can these dry bones live again? To understand fully, to comprehend clearly, the point of this story is to interpret the meaning of dry bones in ancient Israel. For in the ancient Jewish context, in several proverbs and many psalms, healthy and dry bones are associated with hope and despair. Cheerfulness, joy and hope are all signs of healthy bones. And this is why the author of Proverbs 15 and 30 said, a cheerful look brings joy to the heart, and good news gives health to the bones. But dry bones signify those who live physically, but they've died spiritually and emotionally. So God led Ezekiel to the heart of Israel's problems and placed him down in the midst of their despair, in the midst of seemingly helpless and hopeless situation. And God asked Ezekiel, can these dry bones live? God is not asking Ezekiel whether the exiles will survive physically, whether they will have life or not. That's not the question. God is asking the prophet if, despite their circumstances, will God's people discover a new way to lift up their heads and have life and life more abundantly. Ezekiel, can these dry bones live? This My friends, is the perennial and persistent question that the problems of life ask us each and every day. Can our dry bones live? Life's trials and tribulations can sap health and hope from our bones. Can our dry bones live? High school students across this nation are asking this question this morning. Can our dry bones live? To hear a young woman who lost 10 of her classmates and teachers at a mass shooting at Santa Fe High School this week, to hear her say, "It's been happening everywhere. I've always kind of felt like eventually it was going to happen here too." That's a damning assessment of the state of our nation. As one student who survived the Parkland, Florida shooting tweeted this week, she said, "It's so difficult to shout hashtag never again with so much conviction when I'm constantly losing hope for our country and for our government. I can only say that same phrase so many times, but it keeps happening again and again and again and again." Can our dry bones live? Families across this nation are asking this question, for according to a report released by the United Way this week, nearly 51 million households don't earn enough to afford middle-class basics. To put this in perspective, we're talking about housing, food, childcare, healthcare, basic transportation, and a cell phone. That's 51 million households, or 43% of the U.S. population, nearly half of us. And if unemployment, my friends, is allegedly at historic lows, this tells us something about just compensation within our labor force. For due to gross economic inequality in our country, the cost of quote-unquote being average has far outpaced real wages. That's why almost half of American families are asking the question this morning, can our dry bones live? This is the world that you're entering, graduates. A world full of ambition and deflation. A world of expansion and negation. A world full of hope and despair. Yet I'm here to tell somebody that this is not new. Yes, sure. Yeah, I get it. Your circumstances may be different. Our problems may be particular to this particular moment in time, but for thousands of years, back further than the life of Ezekiel, people with less imagination, talent, and resources have had to look down into the graveyards of despair and ask themselves the question, can these dry bones live? This is the point of the story. No matter how bleak the situation may seem, no matter how dark the night, no matter how severe the season, we need not give in to despair today. No environment is too arid, no hour too hopeless, no gravestone too heavy for us to concede to the worst seasons that life has to offer. God asks Ezekiel, "Son of man, can these bones live?" And Ezekiel puts his faith back in God. He says, "Lord, you know." So God tells Ezekiel, "You prophesy to these bones, and I then will cause breath to enter the bones, and they shall live." Ezekiel has faith in God. He has faith in God, realizing that a positive end result also depends on his own willingness to act, A willingness to take his faith, put his faith into action, partnering with God to prophesy to a hopeless situation. Because he realizes that God is saying to him at that moment, Ezekiel, if you give it your best, then I will do the rest. Because our extremity is God's opportunity. When we have reached our limits, that's when we put our trust back into a God that has no limits. So as we prepare to leave this place, whether you're graduating this year, whether you graduated 50 years ago, I'm here to encourage you this morning. Oh, prophesy to the bones. Perform CPR on what may appear to be the corpses of our current condition. Speak truth in love, hope, and an ideal of what is actually possible, no matter your field of human endeavor. Regardless of your vocation or your avocation, when you witness others making peace with a mediocre status quo, when you feel yourself falling asleep to the lullabies of your own entitlement, when you see mendacity and duplicity become markers of success and social promotion, you speak to the bones. Speak words on your job of empathy and compassion. Speak words in your schools of care and concern for the most vulnerable. Speak words in your neighborhoods of inclusion and acceptance. And most importantly, no matter who you come into contact with, speak words of love. Might there be times when we will be proven powerless to stop the hands of injustice? Yes, but there must never be a time when you and I fail to protest injustice. And when we do this, then we will witness the dry bones of hate, evil, and suffering revive into dancing, united bodies of loving and kind flesh. I know this story may seem overly simplistic for some people. I get that when you read this narrative in Ezekiel, it may seem like science fiction. I understand that telling you to go prophesy to the bones of our arid age may come across as even an impotent platitude. But I recently heard an intellectual activist and artist, Walida Amirisha, she put it this way. She said, all movements for justice in this nation's history have been like science fiction movies. We're painting pictures of the not now and the not yet in order for us to envision what is possible. She called it visionary fiction. Love, peace, and justice are fictions that we're working to transform into fact. They are deeper truths that we are attempting as a people to realize and attain. That's why I need you. That's why I need to remember this fact on today, that we need to be strong. We have to prophesy to the bones. We cannot become despondent. We cannot become disillusioned. We cannot see to despair. For we are not here to play dream adrift. For we've got hard work to do and we've got heavy loads to lift. We shall not shun the struggle because it's God's gift. We must be strong. We cannot say the days are evil and obsess over who's to blame. Then fold up our hands and acquiesce and say, oh, what a shame. Stand up, speak out boldly in God's name. Be strong. Prophesy to the bones.